always knew death would wear a familiar face, but not yours.
I was at a meeting recently and your name came up.
I'm flattered London is still talking about me.
It wasn't MI6.
You are a kite dancing in a hurricane, Mr. Bond.
Welcome, James. It's been a long time. And finally, here we are.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition, 2, 1, 0, we have a liftoff. We have a liftoff and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center. The Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hello and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Books in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico. Today we present the final installment of our six-part retrospective on the James Bond film series, The Daniel Craig Era. We will be looking at 2006's Casino Royale, 2008's Quantum of Solace, 2012's Skyfall, and examining in detail the first trailer that just came out for the upcoming Spectre. And joining me again to discuss these films is my regular co-host on the AU Wishbone Show and my semi-regular co-host on this program for certainly for six James Bond episodes in a row now, John Ringer. Welcome back aboard the show again, John.
Thanks for having me, Van. Always excited to be here.
And I'm really excited because this means we've actually done it. We started out with Dr. No and back, I guess, in January or February, and we have worked our way all the way through all of the Bond movies, including all the Eon films. Plus, we talked a little bit about the non-Eon films there, including the Sean Connery one that he did later. And now we're up to one that hasn't even come out yet, but that I am certainly very excited about. I can't remember if we've talked about this before, but in terms of movies coming out this year, where is Spectre kind of on your list, your ranking, as far as anticipation?
For me, it's after Avengers and probably Star Wars, but other than that, I mean, it's probably ahead of the Mad Max movie and Ant-Man and that kind of stuff. So I'm excited.
Yeah. It's definitely after Avengers because Avengers is very special for me, especially with Ultron. That was my first superhero comic book ever when I was about 8 or 9 years old was Avengers 162 with the Avengers fighting Ultron. So this is something I've waited, you know, most of my life for that Avengers Ultron movie. But beyond that, this is the next one because I'm just, you know, I was a huge Star Wars fan as a kid, but the last time Star Wars really made me happy was probably parts of 1983. And and so it's hard for me to get that excited. Whereas James Bond has made me happy and excited in his movies a lot more often than since 1983. So though I do kind of have hope that Disney's plan now is to kind of do the Star Wars franchise the way Eon has done the Bond, which is to just crank them out. And if some of them suck, just deal with it and go on and make another good one. You know, I mean, I've never understood this American attitude, which is we're only going to make a couple of these movies. And if one of them sucks, we'll never make another one again.
No, I think they're going to be some cranking. they're going to throw some out there. They're going to do these three, you know, 7, 8, 9, they're going to do the two spinoff movies and go from there.
Well, I mean, you know, like The Man with the Golden Gun came out and Eon didn't go, oh, it wasn't as good as, you know, Live and Let Die, so we can never make another James Bond film for 30 years, and then maybe we'll reboot it then. You know, they don't do it that way. They say, well, that one didn't work. Well, let's try again. And I just wish that more American franchises would do that. I really do. All right, so let us begin. Actually, before we get started, I got to point out that for those that are in the Chicago area or nearby, that coming up on April 17th, 18th, 19th, weekend after next, as we record this on Monday, April 17, 18, and 19 is the Windy City Pulp Con in Chicago, Illinois. And this is particularly of note for me because my family and I are now planning to attend in the hopes that I might sneak out of there with an award. The Friday night Pulp Factory Awards presentation, I am up for. There's only five awards, and I'm up for two of them. I'm up for Best Novel for Legion 3, Kings of Oblivion, and I'm up for Best Anthology for Pride of the Mohicans, which is sort of a continuation of The Adventures of Hawkeye and Company, and I put that book together. And the artist for Legion 2, Sons of Terra, is also up for Best Book Cover. So, you know, and also Ian Watson from Britain wrote one of the stories in my Pride of the Mohicans book, and he's up for Best Story. So there is a possibility that works associated with me could walk out of there with four of the five awards. That's pretty mind-blowing. It's not going to happen, but you know, it's possible.
It's an honor that you got nominated, man. Well deserved.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I've never won one before. The very first year they did it, I got nominated for Best Short Story for my Gideon Kane Demon Hunter story, which is kind of like Solomon Kane type stuff. But other than that, I've never won. So I'm really crossed my fingers. We're going to go up there. My wife wants to go to IKEA and we'll see how it goes. We'll do some shopping and then drop by the awards and we'll cross our fingers. So I'll let you folks know. We probably won't do another White Rocket show before then. So on our next episode, I'll let everybody know how things came out. So. Let's go ahead and get, do you want to do them in order and start with Casino Royale, or do you want to go ahead and dig around on the Spectre news that just came out with a trailer and then go into the movies? Which would you rather do?
Let's do them in order and then talk about Spectre at the end. Cause I think it makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So 2006, there had been a long layoff, just a 4-year, not as long as the layoff between the 1989 License to Kill and 2000 and the 1995 GoldenEye, but probably the second longest break in the series, where Pierce Brosnan ended his run in 2002 with Die Another Day, or Make Another Bond,
and make another buck.
Yeah, and so that one faded off in the sunset, and I miss old Pierce. Go watch The November Man. It's pretty good that he did. It's kind of a retired James Bond. And so they recast Bond, and, you know, the talk is that they sort of were heavily influenced by the Jason Bourne movies. So I want to get your opinion on that, but let me finish setting it up, and then you tell me what you think about that particular angle. When Bond returned in 2006, it was a very different actor. We had Daniel Craig.
Your file shows no kills. But to become a 00, it takes two. How did you die? Your contact? Not well.
You needn't worry.
The second is... Yes. Considerably.
The man was Lechiffre, private banker to the world's terrorists. Which would explain how he could set up a high-stakes poker game at Casino Royale in Montenegro. If he loses this game, he'll have nowhere to run. You're the best player in the service.
The Treasury has agreed to stake you in the game. But if you lose, our government will have directly financed terrorism. I will be keeping my eye on our government's money and off your perfectly formed house.
You noticed. I hope our little game isn't causing you to perspire.
It doesn't bother you, killing those people.
Well, I wouldn't be very good at my job if it did. How's our girl? Melted your cold heart yet?
James, get the girl out.
You're not going to let me in there. You've got your armor back on.
I have no armor left. You've stripped it from me. whatever is left of me. Whatever I am. I'm yours.
The only question remains. Will you yield? In time?
Who is about exactly our age, John. I mean, he's within months of you and me in terms of age.
That's so scary.
I know it. He looks about 20 years older to me, so that's fine. You know, he's so ragged and craggy, you know. But he's about exactly our age. But he's, you know, he's shorter. He's blonde. He's very brusque and, you know, there's no Roger Moore in him at all. He's like Sean Connery in a bad mood all the time, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But that's and they reboot. This was not a soft reboot. Casino Royale was a hard reboot. This was the very first novel that they had never actually had the rights to do before. And they finally got. It's kind of like with Spectre. It's funny that two of Daniel Craig's four movies will be movies that couldn't have been done before they were finally done. They couldn't do Casino Royale until 2006 because the rights to that book were all up in the air. There'd been like a couple of earlier movies. One was kind of a comedy and all that, you know, back in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And so they finally got the rights cleared up to do Casino Royale, which is a very good story. It's one of my favorite of the Fleming novels. And so they just went ahead and said, well, if this is the first novel and we're starting with a new Bond, let's just hit the reset button. Really, for the first time in the series history, they did a hard reboot and took Bond back to where he'd never killed anybody before at the beginning of Casino Royale. And it had a very stark black and white opening. It was just but you know, the one thing it kept was Judi Dench as M. If they'd gone ahead and switched her out too, it would have been a completely reset. So again, what do you think about the way that they switched from the end of Pierce Brosnan to Casino Royale and the talk about Jason Bourne and all that?
Well, I have a lot of thoughts about that. I want to come back to the Bourne thing, but it makes me think about in the reboot, the way I think about the James Bond movies is that being 007 is like a job, and one person at a time can have the job. And then when that guy retires, the next guy becomes 007. Just like not just the actor, but I'm talking about the spy.
No,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand.
So in this case, there had been a 007. He retired. They needed another one. And Bond was eligible at the beginning of Casino Royale. There's a scene where he brutally kills the guy in the bathroom in this terrible fight and then shoots the other guy. Mm-hmm. And then he's eligible to become a 00 agent and he gets to be 007. But they don't completely trust him yet.
Right.
And I just like that idea that they're continually replacing him just in the same way that we're replacing the actors.
Mm.
I mean, I get the thing about the Bourne movies, which is funny because they have how they twisted the Bourne books. But the fight scenes and stuff do reflect a lot of that, a lot more frantic, and the camera angles and stuff are a lot like the Bourne fight scenes. And it's a lot grittier, more violent and physical than the earlier Bond movies.
Mm-hmm.
And Daniel Craig could do that. But it brings out one of the things that I really like about him as James Bond. And that is that he's the James Bond that just doesn't stop coming. He doesn't give up. Like he's going to keep coming and coming and coming. And it doesn't matter what's going on. It doesn't matter who he's chasing or who he's fighting or how many times he gets beat up or tortured or shot or whatever. He's just going to get back up and keep coming. And that's his, to me, is James Bond, where the other Bonds had different things that were their strength, whether it was the style and the suaveness or the comedy or other physical things that they did. That's his thing to me as Bond, is this kind of can't keep him down thing.
He's the Rocky Balboa of Bond, really.
He is. He really is. And I think, to me, the very first scene where he has the chase scene, where he's chasing the guy...
Madagascar, yeah.
In Madagascar, the bomb maker, and he shoots him in the embassy and stuff, where he chases him through that construction site, oh, yeah. And they chase each other across the crane. It's a great... And the guy's doing the parkour through the construction site, and Bond is just kind of like, you know, the guy does like parkour down the thing, and then Bond like runs through a sheetrock wall and, you know, and then like destroys the entire crane, lowering himself down. But it's a great scene, and it really shows who he is as James Bond, that he's, you know, he's just going to keep coming and coming. He's going to be relentless.
Yeah.
And I really like that about him.
So. Yeah, no, I think that's good, and that's very true. I can't see, honestly, I can't see many of the earlier Bonds doing anything like that. Pierce Brosnan could have done a little bit of it. He does some pretty physical, violent stuff in a few of his, but mm-hmm. not that long. Just that extended of a scene is pretty impressive. To your point about different Bonds and it's like a job. I understand exactly what you're saying, but I utterly reject that. I utterly do. I've heard that idea raised before, and I get what's appealing about it. I really do, and I kind of see it. But I really think it's more just that Bond is whatever era he's being shown in, and there's so little continuity between the films until you get to Daniel Craig. I mean – every Bond, whether it's the same act or not, could almost be a different Bond. You know, we talked about how even back when Tracy's killed in 69, and then, you know, Connery's Bond goes after Blofeld in Diamonds Are Forever, he barely seems like he even cares.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so there's the continuity among the movies is already so weak that I just don't think you need to overthink it. That's just kind of my position on it. I just think they exist in their own little separate worlds, all 20 something of them. And that's
okay. It.
But no, but I can certainly see the appeal of that idea. All right. So,
well, and I want to come back to the continuity idea when mm-hmm. we get to our Spectre discussion.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Cause it's certainly changed now. You know, in fact, these are basically four parts of one big story, and that's amazing. Mm-hmm. That's never, and I don't think it's going to end with Spectre. I think it'll go on to another one. I think there'll be a fifth. I think Craig's contracted for at least one more, and so they're going to round out that story. I think Spectre, and then in like 2018, we'll get Blofeld or the Cat or
Revenge of the Cat.
Revenge of the Cat. If that cat is not in that movie, at least in a cameo, I'm going to be so disappointed. I got to tell you, I ran a poll on the Facebook group that I run called Secret Agents and Super Spies. And by the way, those of you listening, if you enjoy James Bond and all, Facebook Secret Agents and Super Spies. I ran a poll there and I said, do you want A, the cat in the whole movie, just like in the old days? B, do you want a cameo in like one scene where the cat just like walks through the room or something just to kind of know it's there and then you never see it again? Or C, no cat, no way, no how. What do you think the results were? I mean, no percentages, but just which one do you think got, you know, the most votes?
Cameo.
The cat in the entire movie won in a landslide.
Oh, gosh.
And nobody wanted no cat.
I don't want him sitting there petting the cat in the chair.
Christoph Waltz, hello, Mr. Bond. And he's petting the cat. You know, oh, come on, man.
I want him to throw the cat at Bond.
And explodes. It's an exploding
there you
cat.
Go. Or the cat has metal claws or something.
Oh, that'd be awesome, man. Wolver cat. I got to tell you, there is a cool t-shirt. There's a company called Redbubble, I think it is. And they've got all kinds of licensed and maybe unlicensed shirts. I got my Moonraker shirt, which is a black t-shirt with the Drax Industries logo on it. How awesome is that? It says on the
so good
all the way around the top circle. It says Drax Industries Enterprises or whatever. And then on the bottom in yellow, it says Moonraker. And it's got that Delta Wing, you know, logo in the middle. I just love it. I love it. It's going to be my convention shirt all year. They've got a shirt that's got one of those futuristic 60s chairs. And the white cat is sitting in it. And at the bottom, it says in big letters, Blofeld works for me. I was going to get that for Mira because Mira loves
so
the
nice.
Cat. Yeah, I love it. So, all right. So let's break down Casino Royale a little bit quickly. Yeah, it came out in 2006, and it was there were people that immediately objected on the grounds that he's James Bond, not James Blonde, right? He was the first non-brunette Bond.
I don't care.
Yeah, I know, but that's people. Just wait till they hire Idris Elba. Then you're going to hear people complaining about it. It doesn't quite look like I imagine James Bond. I think Idris Elba would be awesome, but it's kind of funny. If they complained about, you know, his hair, then what are they going to say when they bring in an African British gentleman? That would be very interesting to see. I hope they do, just because it'll be funny to see the people that get uncomfortable by such things get uncomfortable. The villain. Now, there's multiple levels of villains to all these movies, right? Mm-hmm. The immediate villain is directly out of the novel, and he is
Le Chiffre,
which means the cipher. He's like the math guy for the evil empire. Okay, he's the guy that does the numbers and keeps the banking and all that. And he's played by Mads Mikkelsen, who I think is awesome.
He's very good.
I think he does such a good job in this. I think he's a top 10 Bond villain just for the way he looks, the way he carries himself, his creepy eye thing. You know, the villain's always got to have some kind of a physical defect, if at all possible. And they've been continuing that tradition in these new movies. I think Le Chiffre's awesome. You've got the African guys with their money that they want back from him. It culminates in the big scene in Casino Royale in Montenegro. Now, in the original novel, it's in France, but they made it a little more exotic and put it out in, you know, the former Yugoslavia, which is cool. And they made it instead of Baccarat, they made it Texas Hold'em Poker. What do you think about that?
Well, I think from a movie perspective, nobody understands how to play Baccarat. I mean, so Texas Hold'em, you could watch the hands and understand, you know, the bluffing and the betting and who was winning and who was losing in each hand. And I think if they'd had some other game, it wouldn't have worked, because I don't have any idea who's winning at Baccarat.
Well, I'll tell you two things. One is, this was back when Texas Hold'em was the big thing. Remember, it was when ESPN first started showing and all that. So
World Series of Poker.
Yeah. And all that. So it was a timely thing in 2006. The other thing is, I know how to play Baccarat, and I've played it with my wife and with my daughters, just to kind of because they explain it very thoroughly in the book Casino Royale. It's got another name too, and I can't think right now what the other name of it is. But Bond plays it in all the movies and everything. But you know what? Having played it, I'm glad they didn't use it, because it's a very dumb game. I mean, it's basically blackjack using different numbers. It's something like, I'm trying to think. I think the number you want to get is 9. And if you go over 9, then you just drop the first digit, right? So let's say you draw a 7. You know, face card. I'm not going to spend much time on this, but I just want to tell you real quick. Aces and face cards are 0. So all that matters is when you draw numbers. So let's say you get a 5 and a 2. Now you got 7. So let's say you draw another card. Let's say you get an 8. Now you got 8 plus 7 is 15. You drop the 1, you got a 5. See, now it's whoever gets closest to 9. It's a stupid game.
So, well, yeah. next time I'm in a casino, I won't play it.
Don't play it, right? It's 21 basically, but 9. It's like 9 ball instead of 8 ball, you know, where you're using a smaller number and smaller set of balls, so in billiards. Okay, so let's see. The pretty good villain, and then you've got the Quantum guys kind of in the background, but you really only get a little taste of them in this movie. They don't really pop up big time until the next movie, and I got lots to say about them coming up. What about Bond girls in this movie? What do you think about Eva Green?
I liked her. Is she the British girl that goes, she Vesper?
Yeah, Vesper.
No, I thought she was good. I mean, this one has the plot twist where, you know, you think she's good, but then she turns out to be giving information to the bad guys.
Yeah.
This she being black, you know, her boyfriend was kidnapped or whatever by the bad guys. So she ends up helping them out to get the money at the end after Bond wins the money in the poker tournament. But he thinks it's the other guy, his local ally. who is, you know, the Kieran Bay of this movie, who is
Mathis.
He thinks so. Bond turns Mathis over to the, you know, to get tortured or whatever.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, in the novel, because I just recently read the book. In the novel, Rene Mathis, he comes in acting like he's gonna sell some brand new electronic equipment, like consumer electronics, to Bond, and that's how he bluffs the guys that are listening on the hidden microphones in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, well, if his name is Mathis and he's selling cheap electronics, he ought to be Curtis Mathis, not Rene Mathis. But anyway, yeah. So, yeah, poor old Mathis gets a rough life in these two movies, doesn't he? He has a rough time.
He has a tough time. Yeah. But so, I mean, I like her. I thought she was good as Vesper. I liked her as kind of the strict, you know, accountant character. The British government wasn't going to let him waste the money or whatever. I thought that was good. And but also she wasn't used to kind of the horror that he saw all the time. And
yeah,
where Bond has to kill these guys up close and personal. She has to witness it. And then she gets kidnapped and she gets, she gets away and Bond doesn't. But ultimately she betrays him and then she dies at the end. I thought she was a good character. And then there was the other character that, you know, he also slept with Dimitros's girlfriend, Greek girl in the Bahamas or whatever, that got killed after Bond chased him to Miami. So
has there ever been a Bond movie though where one Bond girl dominated it and you don't even barely she was the only other real Bond girl in the movie, and she was only in it for like 3 minutes, wasn't she?
Yeah,
I mean, you're right. I guess probably Tracy in On Her Majesty's Secret Service is the only one. But even then, you had all the girls in the allergy clinic that got a lot of screen time, including the curly-headed one that he ended up, you know, messing around with. So, Eva Green just dominated this movie as a Bond girl. That was pretty impressive. There weren't really any wacky henchmen in this movie, were they? I mean, I guess Mikkelsen really was kind of it. You had Mr. White, and you had the bomb maker guy, and you had the other African guys, but there really wasn't like a odd job or a knick-knack.
He had some henchmen, but they weren't anybody. They were just people. You know?
Yeah. The evil scheme in this movie, I'm trying to really kind of understand it. It's one of those that I've watched this movie several times, and I really like this movie a lot. The one thing that always holds me back from loving this movie, and I appreciate it a little bit more now that I've read the book, because it does match the book a little bit. But the thing that's always held me back about this movie is that the structure of this movie by necessity is very odd. And what I mean by that is you climb all the way up to this really intense climax with the poker game. And, you know, you have all the stuff where he has to restart his heart. He's poisoned. He has fist fights in the stairwells, and he wins. And then there's still like 45 more minutes to go.
Yes.
There's like Return of the King size denouement that has to play out at the end of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the book, and I'm not going to do this about the others, but I just want to do it here because this is very significant, because it's very close to the book in a lot of ways, and it captures a lot of the power of that book, which was the first one Fleming wrote. But in the book, after he leaves with Vesper and they're in love and they're going to go off together and they're in this hotel together in France, she slowly starts like getting very distant from him. And no matter what he does, he can't get her to come across what's the matter. You know, I could totally sympathize. How many of us, we've all had girlfriends or wives or whatever that give us the cold shoulder and won't say what's the matter, and it drives you crazy. And there's like 20 pages at the end of this book of Vesper just like ignoring him, trying to leave, not doing anything with him, even though they're supposed to get married. And so Bond is just beside himself trying to figure out what's wrong. And then ultimately, like in the movie, it turns out that she's being blackmailed and trying to work against him, but she loves him and doesn't want to, and blah, 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 blah. So the evil scheme for this one, to me, just kind of drags out into complicated territory at the end when it involves the money and Vesper and all that. What do you make of that whole last bit of it?
Well, I mean, there's the other scheme at the beginning, which is where he takes the terrorist money, with Sheaf, takes all the terrorist money,
mm-hmm.
And then he uses their money to try to make money by shorting airline stocks and then trying to blow up airplanes.
Yeah. What
the heck? And Bond foils up the plot to blow up an airplane. And then so all his stock options expire and he loses all that money.
Yeah.
And so then he's lost all the terrorist money. That's why they're trying to kill him. And then that's why he has the poker game to make the terrorist money back. And then he would pay them back with it.
Needlessly convoluted, yet still fun for a movie, I guess.
Still fun, but then Bond wins the money, and then she steals the money. You know, mm-hmm. She takes the money because she doesn't send it back to the British government because, you know, her boyfriend, which turns out later in another movie, or and he was a bad guy, mm-hmm. You know, was kidnapped or whatever. So she gives the money to the bad guys, the quantum bad guys, I guess.
Yeah.
So, you know, I thought the plot was fun. The other thing is, I think the movie, there's this early peak in the movie too, where there's that whole chase scene at the airport and trying to blow up the airplane and stuff. Mm-hmm. And to me, that was very, very exciting. And then you go through this long, slow build up again from there to the poker game stuff. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's kind of a couple early peaks in this movie, and then it goes through this long, slow build up to that. And then you have the 45 minute, you know, mm-hmm. still to go thing.
Yeah, it just, you know, they always say, as a writer, I've always tried to follow this rule that if a story is written in a way that doesn't conform to normal conventions of structure, you may not notice it like on the surface, but some part of your brain says something's wrong there. It's like a jacket that just doesn't quite fit, and it looks nice on you, but you're just not comfortable with it because something on the inside is wrong, and that's kind of the way it is. It's a very oddly structured movie compared to anything in addition, you know, including the other Bond movies. But yeah, I agree. Memorable scenes, and there's two scenes in this movie that really stand out always for me. All right, and then you tell me what stands out for you, if anything you can think of. what?
It's not Bond getting tortured with the rope.
No.
Good God.
Yeah, that's pretty rough. But that's in the book. Although I think in the book they use a like a broom or a
baton. We're good.
Yeah, something ridiculous. Anyway, all right. To me, the two scenes that stand out, one is him restarting his heart using his supercar.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, as crazy as that sounds, that was a very effective scene, I thought.
Yes.
And it's just funny that he has to go out and have his car jump him off. The other scene, the whole thing in Venice with the building sinking, to me, that just got into Roger Moore territory. And I'm like, I'm getting bored here. Building mm-hmm. sinking and all this goofiness. I'm waiting for what's his name from A View to a Kill and his little blimp to come flying over at that point. You know? Zorin. Yeah. But where they get back on track at the end, though, and I think the other really memorable scene in this movie is when Mr. White is standing out there on the grass and his phone rings and Bond shoots him.
Yes.
And then you hear that, da-da, boom, you know. That is awesome. That is a really, really good scene, I think.
No, because it's also like, oh, you know, all this bad stuff happened to him, but in the end, he tracks this bad guy down and shoots his ass.
Yeah. And that's where it ends. He says Bond, James Bond, and you get the Bond music for the first time, you know, the gun barrel and all that. Now, a couple more things to close this movie out, but I got to say, I do love how that's the end of Casino Royale. And when you come back 2 years later, Bond is in a car hauling ass, being chased by these guys that are shooting, and he's got Mr. White in the trunk.
Mm-hmm. It's like five minutes later.
That's genius. I love that. All right. This movie, before we kind of give our final twist on it, it was what you'd call successful. It cost $150 million to make, which honestly these days is chump change. And it earned right at $600 million. So Bond was definitely back. The public loved it. We've talked about this several times before. It's one of those, let's go back to basics.
Mm-hmm.
How do you rank this one? How do you see it overall? Success, failure, top 10, top 5? Where do you have it?
To me, it's an absolute success. I really, really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the reboot. I enjoyed the story. And I enjoyed Daniel Craig. And to me, it's probably in the top 5 or 6.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was a fun movie. I thought it was well done. And again, it's back to basics. They're not trying to save the world from some kind of satellite thing, whatever it is. You know, it's him. There's terrorists. You know, he's playing cards with them, and he's, you know, beating up people in stairwells and, you know, shooting them and that kind of stuff. And I'm, you know, he's chasing a guy around an airport, he's trying to blow up a plane, and that's the kind of stuff James Bond should be doing. And I thought it was great.
Yeah, like I said, the only holdover in this, really, from the previous movies, I guess maybe besides Jeffrey Wright. Well, no, I'm not sure if he was Felix in the other ones earlier. Is Judi Dench.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the one thing that kept it from being a complete reboot from Pierce Brosnan. But other than that, you don't get anything back. And in a way, that's why Spectre, the end of Skyfall, beginning of Spectre, is almost going to be like a soft reboot, because you've changed out the headquarters, you've changed out M, you've changed out now Moneypenny, you've changed out Q. They've done more changes at the end of Skyfall, beginning of Spectre, than they did switching over from Pierce Brosnan to Daniel Craig.
But they seem necessary in the plot of Skyfall.
That's true. Yeah, instead of doing it off screen, as they've done in the past. Yeah. Okay. All right, so that's Casino. Let's quickly turn to 2008's Quantum of Solace.
I was always very interested to meet you. I heard so much about you from Vesper. If she hadn't killed herself, we would have had you too.
Are you going to tell us who you work for?
The first thing you should know about us is that we have people everywhere.
I thought I could trust you. You said you weren't motivated by revenge.
I'm motivated by my duty.
I think you're so blinded by inconsolable rage that you don't care who you hurt. When you can't tell your friends from your enemies, it's time to go.
You don't have to worry about me.
Restrict Bond's movements. Put a stop on his passport. Find Bond.
How long have I got? 30 seconds. That doesn't give us a lot of time.
Okay, and this one is based on the name is based on a short story from one of the anthologies that Fleming did. So it's still a Fleming title, oddly enough. We have two of those in a row now. This was a movie that really is the first kind of direct sequel in James Bond history. There are some that have carried over a little bit, like I said with Tracy's death and Diamonds Are Forever, but even then, it was kind of strained. There wasn't much there. This really is a sequel. What do you think of when you think about Quantum of Solace?
Well, to me, I think gigantic disappointment because I really enjoyed Casino Royale, and this movie to me was a step down. I think of the plot, you know, where he goes to South America and there's this attempted coup, and the bad guys are related to, you know, or these quantum guys where he follows them up from Mr. White. But they're trying to, you know, corner the water market in South America and create a coup in this country. And he teams up with this girl who wants to kill this dictator guy who's behind the coup. And the main bad guy is this wimpy
Dominic Green,
who's this, you know, CEO type who's donates a bunch of money to environmental charities and runs this big environmental charity. And he's not very scary. And I think, you know, it's just not nearly as successful a movie, I think.
I really see Quantum of Solace as two different movies. The parts that involve Mr. Green and the girl and the Latin American dictator and the water in South America and the whole scene at the end and the glass building and all that.
Yeah.
Don't like it at all. Mm-hmm. But the parts involving Mr. Green when he's hanging out with his Spectre, with his, maybe that was a giveaway. when Green is hanging out with his, with White and all the other colors of Quantum, right? The United, it's like Benetton runs the evil empire now instead of Spectre. but when Green and White are hanging out, like at the opera and all that, love it.
That was the best part of the movie. Yes. You're right. But.
So, from the very beginning, this one goes off the rails to me because you have this whole extended part where Bond goes and pretends to be an assassin and gets in the car with the girl that he's supposed to kill. Mm-hmm. And then she's also she's been sent there to be killed by her boyfriend, Mr. Green. She finds that out and goes back to Green with Bond.
Yeah.
What the heck? It doesn't make any sense. And he's like, oh, honey, you came back after I tried to kill you. Well, here, let me throw you in the water or something. Well, let me try again. Stand still.
Well, no. And then he gives her to the dictator guy to kill.
But then Bond doesn't know that. So Bond goes and rescues her. And she's like, why are you rescuing me? I wanted to get on the ship with him so I could kill him. And Bond's like, well, I didn't know that. Oh, my God. It's so convoluted. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. So that all drove me crazy. But well, let's run through it. I'm not a big fan of that Bond girl. I like her much better in November Man. She actually is the leading lady in November Man with Pierce Brosnan. So I like her better in that. She's supposed to be Russian or something, but or is she Latin American or both, or I don't know. But anyway, there's another Bond girl in this one. There's Fields.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what her first name is?
No.
Strawberry.
Oh, my gosh.
In the grand Bond tradition. But see, because this is a new era, they never tell you that her name is Strawberry Fields, but it's in the credits.
Okay.
It's in the credits. So grand Bond tradition of having a woman with a goofy name. But what do you think about Fields? I kind of like her.
She was cool because she was this inexperienced British spy that he meets in South America, and she's supposed to be keeping on him, but really he's keeping on her. But then, she ends up he's off running around with the other girl, flying around the country in this beat up plane, and she ends up getting killed by getting drowned in oil, which is.
Yeah. Well, that was a take back to Goldfinger, I think, in the gold. But you know who she reminded me of? And I was briefly chatting on Twitter with Tom from James Bond Radio about this last week. The James Bond Radio guys have just reviewed The Man with the Golden Gun, and they were talking about Goodnight.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Fields kind of is a modern Goodnight.
I could see that.
She works, she works for MI6. She tries to help Bond. She's determined not to let him seduce her, et cetera, and then she ends up, although Goodnight actually survives in that movie. To ride on Scaramanga's boat while Knick-Knack is hanging in the basket up on the mast. God, I love that movie. It's so awful. Let's see. Henchman in this movie. I mean, Mr. Green is kind of the main villain. You have two mediocre to bad villains instead of one good one in this one. You have the dictator and you have Mr. Green. Mm. The henchman is that Elvis guy, right?
Yeah.
Anatoly Taubman is Elvis, Green's second in command.
Doesn't do anything.
No, doesn't he get his neck broken by Fields or something? She quote-unquote accidentally knocks him down the stairs or something? It's not.
Yeah.
That's not good. You don't need your henchman to get knocked out by the hot chick. Okay, we talked about the evil scheme kind of already, which involves water control.
But it also, the other part of this that I kind of like is that the CIA is helping the bad guy at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And that Leiter realizes they're on the wrong side of this and kind of helps Bond out a little bit and keeps the CIA off his back a little bit. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, because there's like the two CIA guys and Felix is the one that kind of sides with Bond and tries to help him from the other guy. And it seemed like the other guy had a funny line. Maybe it was in the trailer I ran just now, the audio. So, but something about we can't, stand up for every bad guy or something, Felix. I forget. He says something to him like that, well, this movie, I think the less said the better, really. This one cost $200 million. It cost another $50 million more than the last one. It earned about $586 million. So it made the money back and plus a lot more, but it wasn't as big of a hit exponentially as Casino. And I think Eon understood that, and they took efforts to kind of address that. So where do you rank it?
It's towards the bottom for me. I didn't enjoy it. I thought it was – I mean, it was because I like Casino Royale so much. This one is a huge disappointment, and it's damn pretty down there. The only other thing from a plot perspective we didn't touch on is at the end he gets revenge on Vesper's boyfriend. But
oh, yeah. We miss memorable scenes, and that's one of them at the end is he kind of comes back and finds the evidence that Vesper's boyfriend was a bad guy, and he warns the girl that the dude's messing with now.
That's right.
She says, like, thank you, right, or something, and runs out the door. So that was cool. I like that. And there's two memorable scenes in this one to me, besides one where he makes Dominic Green drink the motor oil. One was we talked about the opera house scene. I love that, that he says something, they're all talking and Bond gets on there and goes, you people have to find a better place to meet or something like that. And they all start getting up and he's taking the pen. I'm like, you idiots. Mm-hmm. He's doing that to get you to show yourselves. So did you notice White didn't get up? Because he's not stupid.
He's smarter than them.
Yeah. They all start getting up and leaving and he's just like, la, 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 I'm Mr. White. Check me out. And, the other memorable scene in this movie to me is the opening. I think it has a great opening. It's where Bond is in his car with Mr. White in the trunk and flying on those, I guess, Italian back roads over the ocean and through the tunnels. And there's like two or three cars full of bad guys shooting at him. And I think that's one of the best car chases in the entire series.
It is a great scene. It's a great car chase scene.
Where they go on either side. At the end, they go on either side of like a tractor or something. And when they come out the other side, Bond has grabbed his gun and he opens up and shoots the guy and the car goes off the cliff. I thought that was really spectacular. So a very, very good opening for that movie. It kind of is downhill from there. All right. So moving on to number three, in 2012, we had another 4-year layoff as more problems involving the studio. It's like every few years they have some kind of studio problem. This time, I believe United Artists went bankrupt and they were afraid for a while that there wouldn't be any more Bond movies. They always say that and they always figure it out. They had to get in with Columbia and stuff and they worked out the finances of it. And so they came back just in time. I mean, they had to be back by 2012 because what was 2012 in terms of years, John?
I don't know.
The 50th anniversary.
Oh, okay. Yes.
They did a huge – I mean, you remember that Bond was at the Olympics in London?
Yes.
And it was the 50th anniversary of Dr. No. And this was really, really big. And so they needed this movie to be a success. They needed a good one. They needed the 50th anniversary to be big. So they brought in Sam Mendes to direct it. He's a big Bond fan. He loves Live and Let Die. He loves Live and Let Die, and you see a lot of Live and Let Die in his in Skyfall, a good bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll see some more in Spectre. So it came out in 2012, and good Lord in heaven, it almost caught the Avengers that year.
It's gone.
You both know what's at stake here.
There isn't much road left.
Take the bloody shot.
What do you say about a man like that?
3 months ago, you lost the drive containing the identity of every agent embedded in terrorist organizations across the globe.
007 reporting for duty.
Where the hell have you been?
Enjoying death.
I only have one question.
Why not stay dead? There's no shame in saying you've lost a step.
They weren't targeting her. They wanted her to see it.
Welcome to the new MI6.
I'm your quartermaster.
You must be joking.
Also PPKS 9mm short. It's been coded to your palm print, so only you can fire it. Less of a random killing machine, more of a personal statement.
Q.
007.
I want to meet your employer.
How much do you know about fear?
All there is.
Well, not like this. Not like him.
Just look at you. Chasing spies. England. MI6.
she send you after me, know when you're not ready, know when you would likely die. Mommy was very bad. The two survivors, this is what she made us.
Everybody needs a hobby.
So what's yours?
Resurrection.
I mean, that was the year. Was that the year of Dark Knight Rises? Also, I want to say all three of those came out. Each did $1 billion, which is amazing. It cost 150 to 200 million, so it may have actually cost less than Quantum of Solace, believe it or not. And it made 1.1 billion.
Wow!
The first $1 billion Bond.
Mm.
Now we can debate whether it deserved to make that much money. My opinion on this movie's changed over the years. It hadn't been many years either, 2.5 really, or three or however. Yeah, it's been coming up on 3. So Skyfall, a good title, I thought. It's not a Fleming title, I don't think, mm-hmm. but it's a good Bond title.
Mm-hmm.
It's not Skyfall Another Day or anything like that, you know. It's got the first really big, imposing Bond villain in a long time. I mean, I think the last time you had a villain of this caliber that dominates the screen and is the whole show, you got to go back, gosh, to Trevelyan in GoldenEye, maybe?
It's been a while.
Yeah. Now, I don't like him that much. He's not my favorite villain by any means, but I give him credit for dominating as the villain. You know, I mean, he does.
No, I mean, he's an excellent actor. He takes over the screen when he's on it.
Yeah, Javier Bardem. I mean, I don't like him a lot as a Bond villain, but I give him his credit that he's due for what he did with it. He certainly made it an imposing force, no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's really not another villain in the movie really much. I mean, there's the guy that steals the hard drive they chase for the first half of the movie, but I mean, he's just a faceless, henchman.
Mr. Hassan.
Yeah. He's a henchman. He's just a fancy henchman in this one. There's a lot of shell game going on in this movie.
Yes.
And what I mean by that is there's a lot of characters that end up being somebody we know, but we don't know who they are until the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, there's Naomi Harris is Bond's like assistant agent, kind of the fields of this movie. And you don't find out until like the last 5 minutes that she is Moneypenny.
Mm-hmm.
Ralph Fiennes is in this whole movie as Gareth Mallory. And he's just some bureaucrat. And you don't find out until like 5 minutes left in the movie that he's the new M.
Mm-hmm.
So, and of course, Albert Finney as the old guy at Skyfall, you know what actor they wrote that part for? Let me think.
Connery.
Yeah, an old Scottish guy who's going to be hanging around as Bond's mentor. I think so, yeah. But of course, Connery never appears in anything that he should.
Mm-hmm.
He does Zardoz and League of Extraordinary Gentlemen and turns down Lord of the Rings and Skyfall.
There you go.
My gosh. Okay, so they're kind of shuffling the pieces around. The evil scheme of this movie, I've tried to come to grips with it, but before that, Bond girls, there's really only one Bond girl other than Naomi Harris, and that is Berenice Lim Marlowe as Severine. And she's the lady in the Macau casino that ends up taking Bond to the island and then getting shot with the whiskey on her head. What did you think about her?
I thought she was good. She played this kind of vulnerable character that had been kind of messed up by the by Javier Bardem's villain, and wanted Bond to help her. So, no, I thought she was okay.
Yeah.
What did you think?
Yeah, I just – she wasn't in as much of it as I kind of would have expected a Bond girl to be in. This movie really did – I mean, one of the themes that runs through it once Javier Bardem shows up, Silva, one of the themes that runs through it is the idea of the rats, that you put a bunch of rats in a box and they keep fighting until there's two rats left. And that was how he saw him in Bond. Mm-hmm. And this movie so focuses on the two rats – with, I guess, the cheese being M, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That triangle is pretty much the whole movie, and everybody else is just kind of on the outside looking in.
That's right. Well, and that's the whole plot. I mean, nothing else matters other than the two of them trying to, you know, one's trying to kill M and one's trying to keep her alive.
Yeah, because the whole MacGuffin, the first half of the movie, is the missing hard drive. It's never mentioned again after, like, the halfway point of the movie.
No, because he got it in order to... Basically, the whole thing with the hard drive was to get them to capture him.
So he'd have it – so they would idiotically plug it into their system, right?
Right, and that while he was their prisoner, you know? So then it would release him and trigger this chain of events where he could kill her publicly.
Yeah, it was a little convoluted, like all the Daniel Craig Bond films have been very convoluted. Mm-hmm. But it does make a little more sense than some of them, I guess, so – All right. Memorable scenes from Skyfall. There's a few.
I mean, to me, I think it's the super memorable scene, but the scene where he fights the assassin guy in the it's not Hong Kong. Where are they?
Oh, in Shanghai.
Shanghai in the building with the neon lights flashing all the time and stuff.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
It was just kind of a cool scene.
That was very Mendez. Yeah, I agree. That the whole end section at Skyfall is basically Home Alone, which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
It would have been funny if like Joe Pesci had shown up with the bad guys in the helicopter. They even have the Aston Martin come back for a quick appearance. That was
I see. That's the thing about the whole idea of like Bond is like a job and it's a continuity thing. I love the idea that the current James Bond has a 30-year-old car. I think that's awesome.
And he flips open the little thing where there's the ejector button and M says something about it.
Yes,
that was pretty funny.
She knows it's the car.
Yeah, she's like, "You going to eject me or something?" And he closes it back. I just thought that was pretty funny. Because the only time the ejector seat ever got used was in Goldfinger, and it was kind of a waste. He ejected the bad guy out of the top, and it just kind of didn't do much, so I was disappointed. But although it did get used in the Cannonball Run. Those of you out there that remember the Cannonball Run, Roger Moore showed up in the Aston Martin and ejected himself, I want to say, at the end of Cannonball Run. There's like five people listening that know what I'm talking about. Send me a tweet.
I've seen Cannonball Run several times.
Yeah. So. Oh, I love that movie. It's terrible, but I love what it could have been. let's see. There's probably a couple other memorable scenes, but the subway thing, but this really wasn't a movie of memorable scenes. It really was kind of a movie of memorable stretches, you know, of sewing things together. There's striking visuals. There's the Shanghai visuals, there's the deserted island visuals.
The very, very striking visuals there. And then also I think the striking visuals to me of just the Scottish countryside.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's a beautiful movie, and I think we can pretty much depend on Spectre being a very similar approach. Obviously, Mendez is back to do it. And I from what we've seen just in the trailer alone, that movie is going to depend in large part on these big, long, sweeping visuals of the Alps, you know, of Austria and these frozen lakes and everything. So, all right. So this movie again made over $1 billion, very successful. Where do you rank it?
I thought it was pretty good. It's not as good as Casino Royale, but it's much better than Quantum of Solace. I mean, I've watched it several times recently because I knew we were going to talk about this, and it's not great, but I really like it. I mean, I just do. Because I like this James Bond, and I like Javier Bardem, and so I think it's fun. It's in the top half for me, but not the top five or so. How about you?
Yeah, it's. I told you that my opinion on it has changed over time. When it first came out, I was bitterly disappointed in it because I did not like Javier Bardem's character. I appreciated the work he was doing as an actor in it, but I just didn't like the character. He just not in a negative way of, other than just I just didn't care for him. I just thought he wasn't a great mm-hmm. Bond villain. And I thought the plot had issues, but I thought that about all three of them so far that Craig has done. I'm really holding my breath for Spectre in terms of that's. I'm more worried than anything else in Spectre about the script. Everything else I'm sure will be great. I'm just worried that they're going to make it too convoluted, too cute, too, you know, whatever. But no, I watched the. You know what? Here's the thing. I've had this conversation with people on Facebook many times now that with a bunch of us that are big fans of these movies, that Quantum of Solace works much better if you watch it immediately after Casino Royale. Mm-hmm. If you just think of those two together as one movie, it really yes. helps Quantum of Solace, okay? Because a lot of the stuff that by the time you saw Quantum in the theater, you'd forgotten yes. a lot of those connections.
Well, that's the thing. Like, they go back and kill the boyfriend, yeah. Vesper's boyfriend, at the end of Quantum of Solace. So it's like, you know, it was years later in real time. But mm-hmm. like I told you the other day, I was sick. I was laying on the couch. I watched both of them back to back, and I was like, "Oh, it really fits there." The chase scene, and then
oh yeah,
following the boyfriend down and taking him out.
If you just watch Quantum of Solace by itself, half the movie doesn't make any sense. And if you haven't seen, you know, Casino, but one time when it first came out, then you're just not going to remember a lot of that stuff. And they really don't make any effort. And that's fine. That's fine. They don't make any effort to catch you up, but you're not going to know what's going on. So they work better together. And then, like I say, going back and watching Skyfall now, I liked it a lot better. I guess I knew what to expect from Silva. And so he didn't drag me down as much as he did the first few times. And I was able to, and I knew that we weren't going to get Sean Connery, so that didn't disappoint me. You know, there's a lot of things about this movie. You know, M dies, but I knew that, so that didn't disappoint me as much. There are a lot of things that happened in Skyfall that disappointed me the first couple of times I saw it. But after you've seen it a few times and you know the stuff, then you mm-hmm. can kind of focus more on the good parts.
Yeah. Well, and also on the what I think is kind of a good way to reboot stuff, like we talked mm-hmm. about. I think that you come out of it with this new team. Yeah. A new Q, a new M, a new Money Penny, and you know, and then you got it's like kind of gives you this something to look forward to.
And it's more like the old days now. They're out of the Pierce Brosnan building, back down in the underground. You know, you expect Winston Churchill to walk by. You know, mm-hmm. like in the early movies, it's more like Sean Connery now. In fact, that was one of the big questions that came out of Skyfall is, are we back to about the time of From Russia with Love, you know, now? Mm-hmm. Are we going to have new versions of those early movies? That'd be fine with me. I wish they would, you know, but I don't know. We'll see. I've always said I wish that they would make a new version of The Man with the Golden Gun, because we talked about this before, that's such a great idea. And I love Christopher Lee, but that movie just doesn't get the job done. And I would love to see somebody like Benedict Cumberbatch or somebody as Scaramanga.
He'd be so great.
As Scaramanga, can you imagine? Just like the one bullet assassin in the shadows. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And the arrogance dripping off.
Oh, yeah.
Spectacular.
Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah, it's probably somewhere in the middle ranks. If there's just to round it off, let's say there's 24 Bonds. This one's somewhere around maybe 13 for me. But it used to be like 18 or 19. So it's made some progress. All right. Well, that brings us now to 2015. Apparently, they decided to go 3 years. We, instead of waiting 4 years like we did after Quantum, we only had to wait three. So we get to Spectre. Now, here's what I'm going to do. I have my technology rigged up, so I'm going to play the Spectre trailer where you and I can both hear it, and then we'll talk about it. If we need to go back and run through it some, we can. So here is just the minute and 36 second trailer that just came out a few days ago for the next James Bond film. This is, let's see, 2023. This is 24, Bond 24, Spectre.
Forensics finally released this.
What is it?
Personal effects they recovered from Skyfall. You've got a secret. something you can't tell anyone. Because you don't trust anyone.
I always knew death would wear a familiar face. But not yours.
I was at a meeting recently and your name came up.
I'm flattered London are still talking about me.
It wasn't MI6.
You are a kite dancing in a hurricane, Mr. Bond.
Welcome, James. It's been a long time. And finally, here we are.
What did you think about that? How'd that? What visceral feeling did you get when you first saw it?
Well, I listened to it again. I love the way the music builds through that.
Mm-hmm.
It's really well done. I got to be honest. The first time I saw it, I was like, what the heck is going on? If you just watch it once and you haven't watched it again, you're like, what is going on in this trailer? I mean, there's some personal effects and you're not sure what they are. It looks like there's a picture of him with another kid.
Mm-hmm.
So you think it's a brother or something, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
And then he talks to Mr. White,
mm-hmm.
which the first time I saw it, I wasn't positive it was Mr. White. I thought it was somebody else because he's kind of unshaven and manic looking.
He looks like he's been in Bond's trunk for a couple more years since the last
movie. He does. He looks looking pretty rough. So so then he's talking to Mr. White. And then there's these kind of scenes, like you said, of the Alps and a frozen lake. And then there's a meeting of people in masks and Bond walks in and – and then this guy says, welcome back. And I'm thinking, is this supposed to be the brother from the picture? Who is this guy?
Yep. But, you know, I think this is one of the best trailers I've ever seen. I mean, it absolutely nails everything it needed to nail coming out of the other three movies. Because we knew that Spectre was now going to be involved. Let me set that up real quick. By the way, at the very end, when Christoph Waltz says, welcome, James. Don't you just need to hear a little cat meowing in the background there?
No.
Don't you just need to hear meow? Oh, I would kill it. I would give you anything. I got to go back and edit it in Audacity. I'm going to put a cat meowing in that just for you. So if you folks just listened to that trailer and you heard a cat meowing in the background of the trailer, that was my doing, not Eon. All right. Or Mendez. Okay. So here's the deal real quick. This all goes back to Kevin McClory. We talked about this, you know, a couple of episodes ago, that Spectre was created in the Thunderball novel. And Kevin McClory co-wrote it, was trying to make a movie with it. And then Fleming kind of like, either because he was just an idiot in that particular moment or whatever, he sold the rights to the studio. And so McClory spent the next like 50 years suing, trying to get, you know, money and rights. And he won an early judgment, which is why he had the rights to remake Thunderball a million times if he wanted to. And he had the rights to the stuff that was just in – that was primarily in Thunderball, like Spectre and Blofeld and all that. What that meant was by the time the legalities got settled in 1971 – they never really used Blofeld or Spectre again. Now you say, well, he popped up in the beginning of 1981's For Your Eyes Only, but they never say Blofeld. It's just bald guy in a wheelchair with a cat.
Mm.
In fact, I don't think he even has the cat because they don't drop the cat in the smokestack. So you never get Spectre or Blofeld again after that. They've wanted to. You can imagine they wanted to. In fact, Quantum of Solace represented them coming up with a new evil organization with color names instead of number names. Remember Spectre, it's like number one. Mm-hmm. Blofeld's number one. Largo from Thunderball was number two. Dr. Mm-hmm. No was one of them, and so on and so forth, right? So Irma, the evil woman with the boots, you know. So these were all members of Spectre. They had numbers. Quantum was a replacement for Spectre. They would have colors, Mr. White, Mr. Green. Well, after they made Quantum of Solace and Skyfall, they, you know, McClory is dead, and Eon just went and wrote a check to, like, McClory's widow. Mm-hmm. And they've got it all now. And so they immediately said, we're making Spectre and Blofeld? I don't know. I've heard of him. La, la, la. Oh, we've cast Christoph Waltz as a character in this movie. As Blofeld? Who's Blofeld? La, la, la. Right? So they've never admitted that he's Blofeld, but come on!
Of course he's Blofeld.
Oh, my God.
But the other part to me is, you and I talked about this in the early movies. It's one of the things that worked about discussing them all is they were overly dependent on Spectre early on in the James Bond series, and it was good for them to get away from it.
Yeah. Well,
I think it really helped it.
Oh, I agree, but it's been a long time now, and I'm ready to get back.
Sure.
It's been a long time since honestly, the last time we really had Spectre doing anything was Diamonds Are Forever. Mm-hmm. And that's not a great way to go out. I mean, I love Charles Gray. I think he makes a fun, wacky Las Vegas Blofeld. He's like showgirl Blofeld. And even in fact, at one point, he's dressed up like a woman, okay, in that movie. But we needed the evil edge, the menace. I mean, Largo was a cool Spectre villain. All of the Blofelds, really, before Charles Gray, were good, hard-edged villains. I know that Donald Pleasance was weird and quirky, but he still was deadly, you know, in You Only Live Twice. We needed to get that Spectre, that Blofeld back. And I really feel like that's what we've got. And I was so, you know, we've been speculating. I've been so hoping that they would somehow tie Quantum up to Spectre, like Quantum was the junior league, the minor league.
Right.
Quantum was triple A ball.
It was some kind of front that Spectre was hiding behind.
Yeah. And I think with Mr. White appearing in this trailer, I'm just like, yes, the continuity, right? The stuff that in years gone by, Eon would have just ignored. They just would have ignored it. And we'd have been watching these movies and we would have been saying, man, wouldn't it have been cool if they made any effort to tie this to the previous movie? You know, them so many times in the past, they've just ignored stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. But this time it's like they're really paying attention, and it really is like a sequel to Skyfall.
Well, I mean, that's the thing is that all, as you said, all the earlier Bond movies basically could be self-contained.
Yeah.
You don't have to watch any before you watch another one. These four movies are, you know, a series, and you must watch them in order.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very plot dependent on that. And I think it makes a big difference. It allows them to do a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's more emotional stuff. It's not all just flash.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because they're using Bond himself. They're going into his character. Now, you don't want to do that too much because he's just supposed to basically be a machine that gets the job done.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's fair game to poke around a little bit in his character and his past to give us the MacGuffins, you know, the plot devices that drive the story forward. And that's really, I don't think there's any doubt that Spectre is probably going to be the most personal of all the James Bond, all 24, right? There's never been a Bond movie that was going to be, that's what I'm looking at this as being so personal to him as a person.
Mm-hmm. So, I can see that.
Yeah. It's about his past. It's about this Oberhauser character that we figure must be Christoph Waltz. I mean, I think that's who he's credited as, is Oberhauser. We just don't know who else Oberhauser might be in his spare time, if you know what I mean, when he puts his little secret decoder ring on with the octopus on it.
And the cat hops in his lap.
And the cat hops in his lap. Amen. So, but yeah, I mean, I just love that. I mean, and Mr. White gives us that iconic line. Where, you know, Bond, what Mr. White's role in these movies is to tell Bond, you are screwed. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, that's what he does. Time after time, White is like, you don't know anything. You're going to die. That's White's job, right? And he trumps it here. Because here, Bond's like, I'm casual and cool. Your name came up at a meeting that I was at. Oh, I'm glad to hear that. That MI6 is still talking about me. Oh, it wasn't MI6. He puts the little Spectre decoder ring down, and White looks at it, and his eyes bug out, and White says, You're a kite floating in a hurricane, Mr. Bond. I love it, right? That's like his most artistic, most poetic way yet of saying, dude, you are screwed.
You have no idea what kind of beehive you're poking.
You are really, yeah, and you're going to find out, right? So I just think that this trailer, for all that it's so subdued, it's so restrained, it's so sedate, there's no action in it at all. But emotionally and in terms of the history of the last three movies, it really pushes the buttons of showing what this is going to be about. And I about lost my mind the first 17 times I watched it. I just can't wait. I think this is going to be possibly one of the best Bonds ever. I've said that before, but my hopes are really up. So we'll see. Anything else from that trailer that jumps out at you? Did it seem like there's some kind of connection, obviously, between the Christoph Waltz character and Bond that goes back? Like, I mean, he doesn't say, oh, Mr. Bond, welcome. He says, at long last, James.
Yes. No, he doesn't say, like, oh, this is the Mr. Bond we've heard of or whatever. Like, I mean, it's like clear that he's supposed to know James Bond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it goes back to, and I'm sure there are people that know way more about this than I do, but it goes back, I think, to the mythology in the books where Bond's parents were killed, like, on a skiing trip up in the Alps.
Mm-hmm.
And he was raised by his aunt briefly before being turned over to this Oberhauser guy who raised him like his ward.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see there in that early scene, the certificate of guardianship, which was probably how the government was documenting that Bond was raised by Oberhauser.
Makes sense.
And so I'm suspecting that maybe Oberhauser had his own son that grew up with James, who is Christoph Waltz.
Gotcha.
Okay. This is just spectralation. I don't know. I don't know anything. Okay. I haven't read any online scripts or anything like that. In fact, the script was leaked in the big Sony hack. And they've changed a bunch of it since then.
I wouldn't read it if it was out there right now.
I wouldn't either. But the point is, some people did and were saying, you know, A, it's not that good. And B, you know, now we know what's going to happen. And Sony basically said, yeah, we agree. This isn't that good. And they went back and rewrote it. So hopefully what they're working with now is even better. So maybe this had a silver lining, you know, to it. So, we're going to have Monica Bellucci as the main Bond girl, from what I understand. She's the oldest, I think the oldest Bond girl ever. She's like 50, but that's only a couple of years older than Bond, so that's not too bad. He's had older Bond women before. Pussy Galore, you know, Constance Blackman was older than him, the first one. So, well, I don't know. Any other thoughts about Spectre and the trailer and everything before we lay it to rest?
No, I'm just excited. I'm excited about it. I'm excited about the continuity. The other thing is, have you seen the poster?
Yeah, the gunshot, you mean, or just him standing
well,
there?
There's the poster. I mean, the scene at the end of the trailer is the poster with the Spectre symbol with kind of it shooting a hole in the ice, whatever. But also, like, the one of him just in the black, all in black with the handgun.
You know where that's from. You know where that's from. What movie is Mendez's favorite? We just talked about it.
Oh, Live and Let Die.
Yeah, think about the final act of Live and Let Die with Roger Moore. He's in the black turtleneck suit with the brown shoulder holster.
You're right.
This is exactly what he's doing. Mendez is getting to relive all of his favorite moments from the series here in these three movies. So,
well, but to me, I think that poster's really effective because it just has Bond in there and it says Spectre, but it's not like, you know, him in a car with exploding and, you know what I'm saying? Or him doing anything dramatic. He's just standing there like looking pissed off, holding a handgun.
Yeah. Well, that's the approach they've been taking with the Craig movies. They've gotten away from the 1960s, 1970s, 1980s and so on. You know, fire explosions, Bond, you know, Naked Woman. They've gotten away from that and they've gone to this very minimalist, just almost artistic expression of Bond, you know, in the movie poster for Casino Royale was him with his tie undone walking. The movie poster for Quantum of Solace is him and the girl walking in the desert. The movie poster Skyfall was him sliding down the rail, you know, in his tuxedo. And the movie's poster now is him in the black suit with the shoulder holster. So they're just going for that very classy, minimalist look, and I think it's very effective.
I like it.
Yeah, I mean, Pierce Brosnan could have gotten away with that. I don't know if Roger Moore could have. You kind of needed all the fire explosion girl, you know, stuff for him. But all right, well, let's kind of wrap up now as we're running nearly out of time. I want to take a chance to kind of look back over the series as a whole. I know that you've been saving some thoughts along those lines of this whole thing is an accomplishment as a piece of pop culture history. Kind of, you know, how do you see the whole Bond series that we've been looking at?
I mean, to me, you know, these are really fun, entertaining movies. And as you said at the beginning, they just keep coming. You know, the movies just keep getting generated, and some of them are great and some of them aren't. But I appreciate the fact that they're kind of eternal.
Yeah.
You know, we love spy stories, and there's this kind of one, you know, super spy that's always out there trying to save the world, or trying to get the girl and do, you know, take the bad guys down. And he does it in different ways, and the actor styles are very different, and the director styles are very different. But, I mean, I've really enjoyed him over time, and I appreciate him. And I think, you know, even now that you could go back and watch them, and they're entertaining. And, you know, some of them are incredibly not politically correct in 2015, especially I think some of the ways they portray women makes me uncomfortable a little bit sometimes. But the other part is I think some of them are just really fun and really well done movies. And, you know, I know that the real espionage world is not like that, but it makes it's, you know, I don't want a realism. I want, you know, a fun fantasy of spies, you know, blowing stuff up and getting away in cars, turning to submarines and all that kind of stuff. And this guy does that. And I just appreciate it.
Yeah. When I look back at the whole run of them, I think that really what stands out to me is that they reflect their times. You know, every one of them reflects its times. And that's so cool because you can do like Mira and I did over Christmas into January and watch them in order from start to finish. Mm-hmm. And you just watch the decades go by, right? I mean, you start out with the cool minimalist 60s with Connery and Lazenby. And then you get into the 70s and you got Roger Moore running around being wacky like the 70s. You get into the 80s and Moore's still running around being wacky and he's 58. And then you get Timothy Dalton.
Yes.
And the 80s are done. And then the 90s are a little more modern seeming, a little more slick, a little more cool, a little more high tech. And you get Pierce Brosnan, who's the Bond for that age. And I think he works so well in that age. He's suave. He's cool. And then when you get into the 2000s, I mean, as much as there's a lot I don't like about Daniel Craig in this role, I have to admit that for these kind of movies, he is the right guy. I don't think any of the others would have – I mean, maybe Connery, but none of the others would have worked as well.
Young Connery could have done it, not older Connery.
Yeah. Oh, right, right. Problem was that young Connery didn't last very long. He made like three of them and was like, oh, time to start porking up. they each one of them fits its decade or two, you know, and the art design, the set designs, the costumes, the villains. I mean, you know, when else could you have done Live and Let Die but 1973 and have like the Harlem, you know, African American characters?
Absolutely.
When else could you have done the rocket that swallows other rockets but 1967 before even landing on the moon, you know? So they all just fit their time so well and are such reflections of popular culture in music and in the looks and in the actresses, the Bond girls and everything. It really is an amazing accomplishment, isn't it? I just wish there was something else. I'm probably forgetting something, but there's no other movie series that has been so consistent over time at reflecting its time.
And also, I just love that they have these common touchstones they keep coming back to the character, you know, the vodka martini shaken, not stirred, and they keep playing with that at different movies. And you know,
the money penny and the
gadgets. Q says bring the stuff back without destroying it. And, you know, I mean, And the way he Bond talks to the villains and stuff, I really appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's neat. It's like there's enough familiar year after year, movie after movie, decade after decade. There's enough familiar that we're on comfortable ground, but there's enough new that you know it's a product of the current age. And if you want the other older ones, you just go back and watch the older ones. Now, that being said, I've always said I would love for them to do a whole other series with different actors and do it like Mad Men, you know, set it back in the 60s with the fashions and everything and the technology. Mm-hmm. I would love that. But I don't want them to stop doing the main ones that actually reflect the times either, you know. So I'd like to have my cake and eat it too, but it's not big enough cake to do that. So, all right. Well, I think we've done a pretty thorough examination of these three and a tenth movies plus the whole series. We appreciate you folks that have stuck with us through all 23 to 24 movies. I guess John and I, this is our little card at the end, John. John and Van will return. In a few months,
dun, dun, dun.
Yes, in a few months to talk about Spectre. We'll do our full movie review just on that one coming up. So, all right. Well, John, I appreciate you and lending your thoughts to this endeavor, and we've brought it to an end.
It was fun, and I enjoyed talking about it. It really gave me a good excuse to go back and watch these movies again, and I enjoyed talking about it with you.
Yep. All right. Well, we appreciate you guys that have listened and are continuing to listen, and the show will be back in a couple of weeks with some new topic. But in the meantime, the Rocket's going to get on out of here for another episode, and we will see you down the road. Night, John.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.